Welcome back to Black Guys on White Movies. I'm your host, Aaron Covington, recovering a little bit. I got caught with the vid-19, but I'm doing well. Go ahead. We got our other host here.
Yeah, I'm the other host, healthy as far as I know. I'm doing okay. Send my health to Aaron Covington. My name is Amana Doomer.
And I am their white friend, Brandon Gardner.
Healthiest of all.
Healthy as I know, recently boosted. All my stuff is up to date.
Just ran a marathon. Lungs great.
5K, just a 5K. Truly. I feel like I posted a picture that misrepresented it as a marathon. Just a 5K.
Oh, right. I was even just making the joke that you were super healthy.
Oh, that I was healthy? No, on Sunday I actually ran a 5K. The Santa Monica 5K went very well. For me, who's for a runner, not good, it was a successful day.
Nice.
Congrats
Thank on that. You. That's hard.
Yeah, that's huge.
This week, the movie of the week is A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. Kind of a biopic of sorts about Mr. Rogers.
Yeah, that's like one of the interesting things about it is that I thought it was a biopic, but it isn't really.
Right.
At least I don't think it is. We can talk about that.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, the synopsis on IMDb says, based on the true story of a real-life friendship between Fred Rogers and journalist Lloyd Vogel.
Which is funny because that's not the journalist's real name. The guy who wrote the real article's name is not Lloyd Vogel.
Right. Something else. Something Junoid or...
Yeah, something like that.
Something that's kind of hard to pronounce.
Interesting. Was this made with his permission?
He's credited as like inspired by or based on the article by.
I'd take such offense to them changing my name because you know someone was like, this name doesn't play in, on the
they East also Coast. Added the part about him punching his dad at his sister's wedding, which also did not happen.
I think
he was involved. Like, it doesn't seem like I think he wanted his name changed. Is what
that probably makes sense. I mean, if you're taking that much license with what happened, you probably don't want people to think that was exactly you.
Yeah. It seems
especially
like a
if
pretty,
you're punching your dad.
Yeah. He was a journalist, but it seems like pretty private in terms of just what I was able to like look up about him or not.
Did either of you guys watched the documentary about Mr. Rogers that came out a year or two before this movie came out? It was called Won't You Be My Neighbor?
No, and I meant to in conjunction with this movie, but, you know, the vid got me. The vid slowed me down.
Yeah. I saw that when it came out and liked it. I thought it was interesting. And it was one reason why I hadn't seen this movie until recently, because it's like, I saw the documentary. I'm not that interested. And I was surprised. I'll say off the top, I really liked the movie. And it was very different than what I imagined it was going to be. When you sort of mentioned this title, I was like, oh, it's going to be like the documentary, except Tom Hanks is playing Mr. Rogers. But I really liked the lens of really focusing it on the writer's sort of journey and him changing and being affected by Mr. Rogers. I thought that was cool. I think the way they introduced, because I think that's a tricky thing too. Like if you go in and I imagine a lot of people who came to see this movie were sort of thinking, oh, it's a biopic about Mr. Rogers.
Right.
So you can't really start the movie with the journalist because people are like, well, I came to see the Mr. Rogers movie.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But what they do, I think, is really smart. If they start with Mr. Rogers and they start with a TV show, they start with what's recognizable. And Tom Hanks is doing all those things. But he introduces the character of Lloyd Vogel as if it's part of his show. And then you do that transition. It's like, oh, I think that's smart. To sort of like, that's a nice entryway into what this movie is, which is like, you're going to get to Mr. Rogers stuff, but it's really not about Mr. Rogers. It's about this guy.
Yeah, I thought that was it. Interesting device as well. I knew it wasn't a straight biopic, but it was still less Mr. Rogers-y than maybe I wanted.
Yeah. You don't get to know much about him from the...
No.
Pretty mysterious. Yeah.
Yeah, he seems almost like a mystical character.
And I know this is like its own kind of genre of movie. Like they did the movie The End of the Tour.
Oh, yeah.
About David Foster Wallace.
But it was Jesse really Eisenberg and
yeah. Jesse Eisenberg, yeah. And it was really them conducting this interview over like a week or something. And there's been other movies where it's like the celebrity and you kind of think it's about them, but they're really being interviewed. Or even like, was it Almost Famous was the one with a kid?
Yeah, it's really about that kid and not about the band. Interviewed. Following. Yeah. It's more about his experience.
No, not about the band. So something that's been done. Yeah, we'll get into like general thoughts right now. That's what.
Even a little bit with Elvis, which came out. Have you both seen Elvis?
No.
That's honestly, it's pretty fun. It's an insane movie, but and Tom Hanks is in that as well. But Tom Hanks plays Elvis's manager, and that's one where the movie's really more about the manager. He's really the engine of the plot, much more than Elvis.
That was kind of a classic black guys don't moment. Have you guys seen Elvis? The black guys. No, man.
I haven't seen
it. Have you seen the meme or the GIF or whatever, where it's like a scene from that movie where they're like, he's white? And people get excited. They're like listening to an Elvis song and Colonel Parker gets excited that he assumes that the singer's black.
Yeah, I did see that.
I think I did see that.
That's on the internet. That's making the rounds.
Actually, I did hear the Elvis movie was just wild. I kind of
do. It's entertaining. I'll say that.
I've heard about the soundtrack and looked it up, and the soundtrack is so modern and black.
Yeah.
Like, what is this movie exactly? Like, somebody's going to have to make a more traditional Elvis biopic at some point.
Yeah, Baz Luhrmann. So go in knowing that this is the guy who did Moulin Rouge.
Right.
Makes big choices.
Putting on like a Vegas show about Elvis. You know what I mean? He's not making a movie about Elvis. His whole style is like, bam, spectacle, splash, yada, yada.
Well, it's funny too. Well, it reminds me when we were talking about Hoosiers, where when you watch the basketball in Hoosiers, maybe they were doing an authentic representation of basketball in the 50s. But that is not an attractive brand of basketball.
Yeah.
And no similarly, with this Elvis movie, like I think for a modern audience, if you just showed Elvis exactly as he was and exactly as the music was, it doesn't seem as exciting as it would have been exciting to people in the 50s. So I think you need to amp it up a little bit to convey the feeling for a modern audience.
Yeah, because I remember watching like documentaries and things where they'd be like, oh, and just the way women would pass out when he would shake his hips, and you watch footage of him actually moving his hips and going, what is happening? That's barely moving at all. What's going on? How repressed was everybody? So if you put that on the screen, it's not
very very repressed.
I don't know. Let me do the Black Movie of the Week.
Great.
I kind of went tonally similar, I felt like, or in a way, The Last Black Man in San Francisco.
Oh, interesting.
Black movie pick of the week. Yeah, I just kind of went with the tone, and it's also kind of about dads and loss and coming to terms with, I don't know, the reality of your family and that kind of thing. So really, really enjoyable movie.
Very good movie.
Jonathan Majors, actually directed by a white guy, but co-written with the lead. The lead of the movie and the director grew up, I think they're both from Oakland. They wrote it together. Director is actually a white guy from Oakland, but it's really a black.
And was this sort of movie. Based on a play?
Yeah.
That the main
I
guy
thought it
wrote?
Was kind of based on the it lead actor's alive. Like experiences.
Mm-hmm, that's what I heard too.
I feel like he wrote a play about his experiences and then they adapted that play to this. I could be way off, but that's what I remember at some point reading about it.
That's dope too.
Yeah. Great soundtrack too. Last Black Man in San Francisco.
So general thoughts about this movie. as we get into it. For me, yeah, it was not a bad movie. It was pretty cool. I think the one thing I felt about it in general was it was so close to having kind of like a 90s feel to it. And I mean, the way they started off with Mr. Rogers and they would cut to segments from his show where they had that 80s, 90s feel. So I kind of wanted it to go more in that direction with like the whimsy of the 80s and 90s. But this movie went way more like sentimental into the journalist life. So that was the thing when watching it that I wanted from it, to be more a little lighter, a little funnier at times, and to have those moments, the emotional moments, be more represented by his relationship with Mr. Rogers or something Mr. Rogers was doing or also going through, instead of kind of keeping him in the background as just like almost a saintly mythical figure. That being said, the rest of the movie wasn't unenjoyable. It was like a good indie movie, you know, heartfelt. I could see people really connecting with it or getting emotional with it at the same time.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is, on the surface, I knew going into this movie, I'd probably leave crying. And so I was similarly to you, Aaron. I was hoping that there would be some kind of, I don't know, like something, some laughter, some gunshots, like some sort of like something that's just like, I know I'm going to
things.
You know what I'm saying?
Laughter, gunshots.
Yeah.
Maybe both.
Yeah.
A decapitation or some flowers. One of those two things.
Any of it.
Some lovemaking.
A little bit of, I can't even say it out loud. Mr. Rogers lovemaking. Just like it. It was just this story of like a tortured journalist who's a new father and then dealing with his stuff, sins from his father. And I was like, okay, I did cry. I'm not going to lie. I cried.
That's one of the things I want to talk about. I really cried.
They got me, but I'm like, give me a little something. Give me something. Make this a movie. Please make this a movie.
Can I ask him on what parts did you cry?
Yeah.
During.
I'm
So this is where I felt like, okay, this movie's emotionally manipulative because it got me to cry, but I knew it was going to go for it. The part where he asks like to take a minute or 5 minutes or whatever he's sitting in the diner with the dad, with the journalist. And he goes, well, just take a minute to think about those who've like loved you and brought you to this place.
Like, and then everybody turns.
Everybody in the diner turns and everyone's looking and they play the music. And I'm like, fine, I'll give it to you, but I don't like that I'm giving it to you.
Well, fun fact about that scene, everybody in the restaurant, because I remember it was like, why are they showing everybody else in this restaurant? Everyone in the restaurant was a real person from the real Mr. Rogers' life, including his wife. Is one of the women who's like in the restaurant who turns and looks over, and the other people are like people who actually worked on his show. So that moment of silence is sort of a moment of silence for Fred Rogers in the middle of the movie.
Interesting. Wow. Okay.
Wow. You know, that almost got me here now, not when I watched it,
man,
but knowing that that was all those people.
I felt like crying. Like I cried. So I watched this movie yesterday afternoon. And I don't know, a lot of times it's me watching movies in the middle of the afternoon where I did not expect to cry watching this movie. And I was crying like loudly. And the movies I can remember crying, because I think it's like an odd list, so I'm going to share it. The first time this ever happened, I was watching A League of Their Own. And I'd already seen the movie. I was like watching it in the afternoon before I went to work when I was a teenager. And it was the part of League of Their Own where one woman is like helping the woman who can't read find her name on the roster. Really made me cry. Not that long ago, whenever the LeBron James movie More Than a Game came out about his like high school team, the part where it's senior day and his mom isn't there, so his like best friends walk him onto court instead of his parents. Made me cry. Like I was in a movie theater for that one. I was so loud and so embarrassed to be making so much noise. But anyway, this one many times, but one of the times was when Mr. Rogers comes to visit Lloyd and his family at his dad's house where his dad is dying.
And
his dad says something like, you know, well, if I'm still around, and everybody gets uncomfortable because it's, you know, we're talking about death and that's uncomfortable. And Mr. Rogers is the one who's sort of like, you know, sometimes it's really helpful to talk about death. Death is human, and anything human we should be willing to talk about. For some reason, that part, I was just like gone.
Yeah.
It was
rough to the point where I'm like, I hope my neighbors in my building don't hear me.
Yeah. Oh. It was brutal. Aaron, are you just cold hearted? You didn't cry at all during this movie?
Yeah, I'm not very expressive emotionally.
I'm not either normally.
I don't really, I'll get that feeling in the nose, but it's going to be rare that a movie really has me sobbing or like something where somebody else would hear it, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah. We'll
Can you think of one?
Yeah.
What's the last one? Choked up. The last one. You guys see Marcel the Shell with his shoes on?
Not yet.
No, I didn't.
Bro. His grandma, bro.
Yeah, don't spoil it because I definitely do want to see it.
Let me know when y'all see that movie, okay, Marcel. Cool. Maybe we'll do that. Or I don't know if we'll do that one this season, but I highly recommend it. Great, great. That's probably the last one. Also, like Black Panther 2 trailer. I'm like,
oh yeah.
That comes out, you know, and
yeah, there's so much behind that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So much.
But the thing that interested me about why I chose this movie and kind of Mr. Rogers as a subject is just this idea, and I see it so much now, of what it means to be a good person or to be a good dude or good man. And I just see it all the time now, especially after January 6th. People are, you see it online, it's like, oh, these school shooters, and oh, he's such a good kid. He's a good dude. What does that mean? All these people getting subpoenas and arrested with, you know, working with Trump. I'm a good person, but I think, you know, it's like, if you think all these racist things and you think about hurting people, are you a good person? What qualifies? How do we just throw that around? So I've been kind of drawn to that as a subject matter. And that's why I came to Mr. Rogers and to this movie and to Tom Hanks, who's, you know, if you're going to give him a title, one of them could be America's good guy. Mm-hmm. You know,
seems to be.
He's like always. I mean, even if he's played a villain, it's like that's not his persona. You know, his public, the way we see him is like, man, that's a good guy. He's Tom Hanks. You know.
Yeah,
it's interesting what you're saying about like the January 6th thing and school shooting and Mr. Rogers, because when Mr. Rogers talked about the point of his show, and in the documentary about him, there's that part where he's testifying before Congress and talking about what his show does. The main one is teaching kids how to deal with their feelings. Mm-hmm. That like we tell kids to bury their feelings and it's unhealthy.
Yeah.
And it does seem like definitely with school shootings, mass shootings, that those are people who never learned how to deal with their feelings. That they have all this anger or sadness or trauma that is now being expressed through violence. And I assume the January 6th people as well. And his whole thing was like, well, you need to be able to express that in a healthy way. You need to be comfortable. You need to have people you can talk to about that. And for parents to treat their kids like emotion is okay. And stop telling kids, don't be sad, don't be angry. That doesn't help anybody. And which is why I thought the Lloyd Vogel character as the focus worked so well, because it was this adult who hadn't learned how to deal with his anger. Mm. And so the whole movie is him sort of learning how to talk about it, which he really is uncomfortable doing through the whole movie. So it's very satisfying then when he's able to forgive his dad.
It definitely was.
Yeah.
So that brings to mind a bunch of quick thoughts, I think, like, when people are always saying, how am I supposed to explain that to the kids? Or we have to hide this from children. It's like, there's so much privilege wrapped up in that you can hide something from a lot of kids don't get to have the option of what is hidden from them or not, you know? And if we think about the community, and just like you said, how do we teach each other to deal with traumatic events? You know, I think that could go a long way to, you know, people being more well adjusted and being more, you know, able to cope with things. But we always try to hide things and we have to suppress emotions. Mm-hmm. Then I think America as a kind of a total entity is an angry entity that never dealt with its things, you know. Mm-hmm. All the stories of any point of coming to America, people coming here and building here, it's like so much anger built up in that and so much disappointment and loss and coming here and losing everything and leaving everything behind or being transplanted here, you know, against your will, all the various situations, none of that has ever been dealt with. So we are a very angry country and culture, you know, and it comes out in everything. You know, I don't know that other cultures have music as aggressive as what we have. You know what I mean? Like we take rock music and make heavy metal. You know what I mean? We take rap music and make like, you know, the hardest kind of rap. You know, we just do that across the board. Our movies are super violent without joy, any joy behind them, you know? So there's just a lot of anger deeply built into like the soil and grains that I feel like of this country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And all those pieces of art are just reflective of what people are experiencing in the best way that they can communicate it. And so if it's coming out that angry, then there is kind of a disconnect with being able to communicate our feelings back to this movie. Like there's no way that it's hard to ask for help when one, you don't know how to ask, and two, you don't know if there's even like a safety net or a level of people caring to help. And I think that's a thing that I've noticed is missing over here is like, oh yeah, this, you have the opportunity to do whatever you want, supposedly. There's no looking back. You just have to move forward. Forget all the things that have happened before.
Right.
Just constantly try to forget all the things that happened before. We're all starting at the same line, even though it's not true. Just go from there.
Yeah, some of it is like individualism in in American culture and this idea of being strong, which often gets translated as not admitting weakness or having shame about things rather than ask for help. And being like, no, I have to do it alone. This like stiff upper lip, like cowboy thing. That's a really unhealthy way for people to live.
You said stiff upper lip. And I was like, I never thought about that literally. And I'm like, literally try to make my upper lip stiff. What did that?
I think it's normally people just use it with the British and it would be something the British would say. It's like but it's like that idea of like not showing emotion through your mouth. It's almost like thing of like, if you started to get sad and it's like your face stays sort of like a statue.
Right.
I feel like it's the lower lip that quivers though. So it's like.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, when you're upper lip. It's hard to move the upper lip. You can't do much with the upper lip.
Mm-hmm.
I think about this ratio thing and then we'll get in and kind of go through the movie of progress to maintenance. And America is like 95% progress and very low maintenance. Right, but I think as humans, we need to live more with maintenance because everything is maintenance. You got to take care of your body, your mind, things you buy, your relationships. Everything needs maintenance, but we're progress oriented. It's like, check this off, move forward, move forward, move forward. And we don't circle back and like maintenance, you know, even just like, on a basic level, just like cleaning, you know, and how hard it is to like get a kid to, you know what I mean? To clean themselves or you don't feel like doing the dishes because maintenance has become almost a negative thing. Like just something that has to be done. It's a chore. Oh, but maintenance is really most of what life probably is. And of course, if you looked at a timeline of history, it's like there are some times when progress is always going to take priority, but our resting state, I think, should be more like 60% maintenance, 40% progress or something, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's interesting going back to Mr.
in the world. Yeah, go ahead.
Just going back to Mr. Rogers, because it's something that the character of his wife says in the movie, which is that this is a practice for him that he works on, and that like every day he does these things to ground himself. He prays, he writes letters. So it's like he's doing that personal maintenance. Like if he seems like a saint, if he seems like incredibly compassionate and grounded and calm, he works at that. He has a temper. He has like his own demons he struggles with. And he, every day he works on being the version of himself he wants to be, which is cool.
Yeah. When he was like, they were talking, Fred and the journalist, and it came to Fred's kids, and he was like, we had our struggles. Excuse me. He was like, you know, my kids didn't mention me for a long time, and was talking about that. I thought that was really well done.
That part of the documentary is really interesting because they talk to his sons, and his sons basically say that of like, it wasn't easy being Mr. Rogers' kid.
Yeah.
And he, and this really comes across in the documentary, was like an odd person who spoke using the like Daniel Tiger puppet a lot as like a way of expressing things he couldn't express as an adult. Mm-hmm. And he mentions it in the movie, but it seems like he did have a lot of trauma. It seems like he had like a very sad, lonely childhood where he was picked on a lot for being overweight. And he even had some, like, he was into numbers in the documentary, and he was really into staying a very specific weight, which was like very thin. And he was like very into swimming regularly to stay at that weight. And so he clearly had some like issues he was struggling with till his death.
Oh, wow.
Man. Yeah, I got to see this doc. Come on, we got to get on it.
I know, we got to watch this. I'm like, dang, okay. It makes sense. All we saw was Tom Hanks in a pool. And I'm like, okay.
But there's little parts in this movie, like the part where Vogel is watching Mr. Rogers play Daniel Tiger, and he like looks around the thing to see Mr. Rogers like doing the voice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's like, there's something weird about this. It's cool, but
it's creepy. It's a little, something's off.
Yeah. It's not, you know, normal. It's not like an easy thing to like he's not, and maybe it's part of what made him so effective, but there's something unusual about him.
Yeah. He's not a normal guy. I think that's what you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, if he was, he wouldn't have done a show.
Right. Exactly.
That's not what anybody does.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He wouldn't talk to kids that way.
I mean, and thank God he didn't have, you know, we didn't uncover a bunch of Fred Rogers scandals.
Ooh, yeah.
In his life or something, you know, like so many others. So,
yep.
Yeah. He seemed to live what he preached, right? One of the few that feels like that, you know, seems like that was the case. And I did notice, like in the movie, when we first see Tom, I'm like, and I didn't know that about Mr. Rogers. And, you know, everybody has body issues. I'm 6'8". Like, I've gotten stuff about my body my whole life. You know what I mean? I've always been tall. Mm-hmm. I think about that a lot. Everybody has body stuff. You don't know somebody who's, you just see and like their foot is hurting, or they got back issues, or
they're constipated. They're insecure about their ears or their chins or their whatever.
They get migraines, or who knows? Their teeth are, they hate. But I didn't notice with Tom Hanks, I was like, oh man, Mr. Rogers was skinnier than that, bro.
Yes. I had that thought too. Only because it was a big deal to Mr. Rogers to be skinny. Yeah. Did I think about it?
Yeah, that's like, funny.
Tom, you needed to go on the Christian Bale diet for this.
That one, castaway diet.
Castaway diet. Yeah, you need to channel that. Now I feel bad for thinking that, but
I had that evil thought too. I was like, I'm not going to say it, but I'm glad you mentioned it. Cause I was like, yeah, Mr. Rogers was tiny compared to
this. It's like such a petty critique, like from a fan, even like, it feels like a Twitter critique. Like if we were all watching the movie at the same time and on Twitter, It's just like an easy Twitter joke. Like, Tom's about, looks like about two Mr. Rogers out here.
Right. It did. This is like, is not exactly that, but it's also an issue that's like unavoidable with these kind of movies. But when you've got a movie star as famous as Tom Hanks, I don't ever forget he's Tom Hanks as I'm watching him. I never think I'm really watching Mr. Rogers. And the only way around that, I guess, is to get a less well-known actor, but you can't do that and get the financing you need to make your movie. So it's sort of unavoidable. But it's definitely something where what ends up happening is you get a sort of blend of your perception going in of Tom Hanks and the character. And if they work well together, then that works. But you can't ignore the fact that it's Tom Hanks.
That's so true. And there was I'm sure you all noticed it as well, just the style that it was shot. There, it would switch into moments of like, oh, is this like a, just somebody with a digital camera filming them package these magazines? Like it's a normal situation. Right.
I think they wanted that part to look like the old show looked.
Like the old show.
When they would do those kind of explanation videos for kids.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That makes
they would change the aspect ratio, right?
To like that TV ratio,
That's the kind of thing that's like just filmmakers are... There are things with filmmaking that definitely when I, like 10 years ago, I was like, man, these things are so cool. And now I'm like, unless it really does something specific story-wise, I kind of roll my eyes at it. So like changing aspect ratio is one of them that some other movie I watched recently did that too. I was like, that's great, fine. But you know, film nerds are like, oh, they changed the aspect ratio. You have to understand because in the 90s, we didn't have...
That's a big thing in Grand Budapest Hotel. They change it like four times.
Let me see if I can find it. And then the other thing is like oners. Oners used to be so cool. One long take for a scene and we follow on the character and stuff. But now I'm like, get that oner out of here. Get the oner. I want to see it.
Yeah. It, at that point, it's just the filmmaker being like, oh man, I want to be challenged. How can I, do it even better than the last person did a oner? It's no longer about the work. Like 1918, you know, love it, but it didn't need to seem like a oner the whole time. But the other thing though, about this 1917. No, I'm talking about the sequel.
You got to see the sequel.
You got to see it. You got to see it. The war is settling down. But about this movie was I didn't grow up watching Mr. Rogers.
I didn't either.
I only knew of him like as a person. So
interesting.
So coming in and seeing the way they shot it, like his old show, like it starts with him being like, you know, welcome to this. We're going to talk about this guy. And he opens the thing on the board and it's just a big photo of this guy with his busted face. I was like, this is a horror movie. Like, what? Why? That's a scary looking image. I didn't know Mr. Rogers did this on a show. I'm just like, that's funny. That's ridiculous. To have this like nice little cardboard.
So that definitely threw you. You had no idea what was really happening right at that moment.
No idea. I was like, I don't know what this is. This is something I don't know.
Oh, that's funny. Wow. Yeah, when I was growing up, I grew up so far upstate New York that we'd get Canadian TV. And so I watched a Canadian version of Mr. Rogers called Mr. Dress Up, which I loved, but totally different show with that's this amazing guy. I don't even know his real name, but it was like similar. He did a lot of drawing and like talking about drawing and like he would also wear different costumes, which is why it was called Mr. Dress Up.
Yeah, I definitely grew up with some Mr. Rogers. I didn't watch a lot of it, you know? And then now we're getting into the point of the podcast. Mr. Rogers was so white. And there was definitely something obviously innocent and informative about him. But I just didn't feel like it was super for me. I feel like there were things I could get from it. Even as a kid, I was like, knew that there was something interesting, but it never quite just like held with me or stayed or something that would became like appointment TV as a kid. You know
what
I mean?
Were you into Sesame Street as a kid?
I would watch Sesame Street with the babysitter, you know? Mm-hmm. I was like, I don't know, 5, 6, but I didn't watch a lot of Sesame Street by myself.
I was just curious if that felt at all more sort of accessible to you.
You know, the thing is, they did have more diverse cast on Sesame Street.
Yeah, it seems like they always made a real effort there.
I think at a certain point, I just didn't really feel like I was really had the chance to do a lot of kid stuff as a kid, even. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think I kind of grew up kind of fast in a certain way, and definitely in my media consumption. So I like knew about this stuff, and I kind of just watched it and knew about it in the way that I've watched some shows now, where it's like, I just want to know what's going on, but I wasn't like a fan, you know? Mm-hmm. And you know, if I went to school, wasn't nobody talking about Mr. Rogers or Sesame Street, you know? So it wasn't something that had anything in my environment that kept it alive. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. At a certain age, maybe 8 or 9, the only thing that kept alive in my environment was sports, you know? Mm. So then I kept up with sports more, but there was no program or anything that like all the kids that I went to like elementary school were watching, you know, kids didn't even, I go with kids that didn't watch any TV or didn't have TV or the folks were watching TV. So they didn't get to cut in. It wasn't that kind of relationship. So these things didn't really stick with me.
Yeah.
Going through the movie, it was very interesting. The journalist has a black wife. Mm-hmm. I was just like, okay, I did my internet searching. I couldn't find the real journalist's wife. Mm-hmm. I just wondered why they made her black, right? Mm. There's no answer to that in the movie. It's just casting. Was it a marketing decision? You know, it still kind of boggles my mind what app was made.
Well, yeah, that choice and the scene where Mr. Rogers is on the subway and all the kids start singing the Mr. Rogers song to him.
We were definitely going to get to that.
Both of those, I feel like, are choices to show that his reach was not just to white people, because his wife is the one who's the fan. His wife is the one who's like, oh, I love Mr. Rogers. And then these kids, who I think most of them were black on the subway, are the ones who are excited to see Mr. Rogers and are singing the song.
So it's kind of like the American President movie we watched. Dave, right? That was Dave. It? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, Dave's a good guy because he wants to help the poor black kids. Mm-hmm. And how do we know Mr. Rogers is good? Black people know him and even like him. Right. He must be a good guy right there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It wasn't just the kids on the train. It was also the string quartet. Those were all black ladies.
Right.
Who were like, we're going to play your song. And it was like, he was like so gentle and sweet with them.
Those were real. That really happened. Those with those black musicians. That was like something where they brought back the exact same ones he interviewed.
Wow. Oh, wow. It felt so real. I was like,
I will say, like in the documentary too, he made a concerted effort to have regular black characters and to go places and like you could tell like part of his, he was so religious that part of his mission, I think, was addressing racism and prejudice. One of the things they talk about that he struggled with was homosexuality, where there was like an actor, a black actor on the show who was also gay, and Fred Rogers sort of struggled with embracing
his sexuality.
It is interesting. It is very interesting. Sesame Street, Mr. Rogers, Barney, even Pee-wee. These were all like children's shows in that time, 80s, 90s. There's probably some others. They are all so diverse. They all made a point. Reading Rainbow, Electric Company. All these shows made a point to be very diverse.
A lot of them were PBS too, which I think is part of it. So it's public broadcasting where it's very, you know, people who were important to them, I think, to have like a diverse show and aren't just driven by, market testing or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
we go through the movie. The journalist is like, I'm going to do this story on Mr. Rogers. He's struggling. She kind of talk. His boss tosses him a kind of an easy story.
Right. Puff piece.
Puff piece. Go to Mr. Rogers. And his wife says, don't ruin my childhood. And that is a phrase that always makes me pause. We can't be children forever. I think that a lot. Like something that happens now, I mean, ruin your childhood is just not a phrase that connects with me on almost any level when people say that.
But isn't it sort of like we were saying, isn't it good that there's no scandals that ever came out with Mr. Rogers? It's sort of true. A similar thing to that.
Yeah.
Of like, He stood for so many good things. It would be a real bummer to find out he wasn't who I thought he was.
Yeah. True. And this reporter's whole deal was they write like slaughter pieces.
Yeah. Exposés that find the evil behind the surface.
Or darkness. Like yeah.
So then my question becomes about Good Dude as we're, you know, getting close to the casting time. We got to get to it. Could a black person be allowed to be as good as Mr. Rogers? Like the persona that he created on camera. I mean, in real life, there's all kind of people that are
probably as
good as Mr. Rogers, right? They work wherever. In the media, would a black person be allowed to be that nice?
You know what's interesting? In a way, I feel like they would be, because I think even racist people, I think, like the idea of like that sort of exceptional black person, that sort of thing, like where they will be the first person to be like this person.
Yeah.
Look how great they are. You can do it. Here's the model. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think there probably, if we thought about it, are those examples where even people who are like racist to some level are sort of excited for like that clean cut black person that they can be like, this is what we like. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think a black person will be allowed to be complicated or mean. I think
Mr. Rogers definitely wasn't. Yeah.
I think that black people would be allowed to be a Mr. Rogers as long as they know their place. Like that's what you are.
Ooh, Amon, that was the truth right there.
That's what it is.
Stay in your place. They wouldn't let him make that speech to Congress. He got to stay in that place.
He's got to stay in his place.
Yeah.
I mean, look at all the people they've tried to put in that role of like the ideal person back in those days. And then the minute something bad happens, all of white America goes crazy. Let's talk about OJ. You know what I mean? OJ was like he was the king. He was like the person that they put in all the Naked Gun movies. Right.
Bill Cosby.
Bill Cosby. Wow. Like it's
one person I want to talk about, less controversial than those two.
Okay.
Just briefly, because we could go on forever talking about this guy, is Michael Jordan, who was a guy that became this totem, this figure for, you know, sponsorship and corporate and athletic excellence, of course. It's far greater than you would expect anybody to have been in a sport at that time. But for all he was doing was just playing the sport. And doing commercials, you know, Boys and Girls Clubs and McDonald's and Gatorade.
Yeah, very and purposely then, not political.
And then people just start digging into him because he was the first athlete so big at a time. There's got to be something wrong with him. Oh, he gambles.
Right.
Oh, look at this about him. Look at that about him. His gambling. And then his dad dies. And it's like, that's because he had gambling debts. Right. Look at this. Like, the scrutiny that athletes go through today, imagine. Michael Jordan was the first one to deal with all of that, right? And then, and then he retired. And when he talks about retiring, when you look at the clips and stuff, like at the top of the game, I don't have anything to prove, but he was worn down because of the toll that being the face in the media and just trying to be like, even though he was trying to be pretty bland, you know? But that angered so many people that they didn't let him just do that. They had to uncover. And then it was like, he's so competitive. Look how mean he is. And he gambles. Look how insane he is. They couldn't just be like, look at this great athlete who's just dominating.
Right.
And then he got some favorable treatment too. Obviously people will talk about that, but this was also the other side of it. And that's what I wonder about black person being that good. Even nowadays with black media. Mm-hmm. Some of these like Twitter accounts and things that I see in social media, like, we'll be skeptical of it ourselves. Yeah. So would we even allow it is a question that I also wonder about.
I mean, it's something I always remind myself is how incredible it is that LeBron James has been without any real scandal while being famous his whole life, like since he was 12.
15, 12?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He was on the cover of ESPN when he was like 13 or 14.
Yeah.
And that's amazing. That's like, one, just to be in the public eye and have that scrutiny for that long and not have like a breakdown of some sort.
Right.
But to the degree that, and I obviously he's very, like any celebrity, I think, is careful about sort of curating the image he wants to project. Mm-hmm. But the fact that he's able to do that means he's got it more or less together, which is amazing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's remarkable. And
truly,
you know, to wrap up the hoop talk for people that don't care about
it. At least we're talking about the celebrity of them. We're not getting into the X's and O's.
The celebrity of it. LeBron also just kept it real to an extent. You know, he didn't put forth a false image.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. I would say it wasn't like, oh, who's the real LeBron? He was always like, felt like mm-hmm. he was putting forth a real image. So.
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe there's a blueprint in that. And also, but some people can't put forth a real image because they got so many skeletons. So it's, you know, who is the man behind, you know, who is the real person anyway?
Yeah, that's, whoa. I mean, as we're talking about this, I'm like, oh man, thinking of the graveyard of people who have like been put on a pedestal and then immediately taken down. Like immediately Will Smith comes to mind of this real person who is like...
Slap him up, Will. Smack him down, Smith. Yeah, man.
Wild, wild backhand, Will Smith. Tiger Woods too.
But Will, like, in a movie about backhands, gave a backhand to, I don't know. That's like, you see, I'm good at the joke there.
You see it.
There's a joke in there. But it's like, are they allowed to be that good? You're right. I think people are, the minute someone's on that pedestal, it's easy to see Mr. Rogers and go, oh yeah, this is a good guy, because we aren't with the same mindset we have back then. That's why there's so many more saints in the past than there are right now, right? Like yeah. It's so much easier to be like, oh, look in the past and fantasize and project like a better image of a human right. being than we do now.
If you're really a good person, a saint now, you're like a third grade teacher somewhere, or mm-hmm. you know, you run a small business. You know, it's the more, I don't know, public you are, it's like, it's better just to be more real, because it's just not going to
go bad.
Translate.
Truly.
Well, the reporter character does represent that modern phenomena of looking at someone's goodness and success and being like, there's got to be more to this. I bet there's something hiding. Like,
that's true.
Being cynical, right? Like, that's such a Twitter thing to be like, mm-hmm. I can't wait to leap on whatever this person says that's wrong or does. That's wrong.
Yeah. Can't wait to take
it. I like what Hanks did in the movie. I like Rise. Is that how you say his name? Reese?
I think Reese. Matthew Reese.
Oh, good. That's even better. Reese. Matthew Reese, yeah. Reese. Mm-hmm. I like what he did in the movie. I like him as an actor, too.
You guys watch The Americans? I got to plug The Americans in case listeners haven't watched, because that show is chef's kiss.
It's one of those shows that's on the list like The Sopranos that I have to watch.
Ooh,
yeah, man.
What both the? Those, dude.
I know.
You might
have
to do an episode on these shows to get them on to watch them.
I'll watch them for the podcast, if that's what we're doing.
Yeah, he's great. Last issue this movie brought to mind, we get to casting. This whole movie was really about one guy's dad issues. Mm-hmm. Mm. I hate when guys say a woman has daddy issues. Nobody has more daddy issues than a man. Men are always either trying to distance themselves, live up to something with their dad. This whole movie was about him
holding on to anger. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Holding in anger, trying not to be like his dad, the sins of the father. He was a new dad. Yo, Everybody has dad issues. You if you were born, you had a dad.
And mom issues. There's a reason why therapists right away are like, what was your relationship like with your mom? What was your relationship like with your dad?
Yeah. That's where they're going to start, no matter who you are.
Yep.
So.
And your mother and father had their own mother and father issues.
And they had.
Yeah.
That's so true. Let's go. It goes all the way back, to the start.
If a dude is like, she's got daddy issues, she should just be like, you'll never be your dad. And see how the guy reacts. Ooh. He'll just start bawling on the sack. What'd you say about my dad? Ah! Rage out.
I think you could yell that on like a crowded bus or in a crowd of people. Just be like, you'll never be like your dad. And then see how many people just rage up. Like turn around who said that? What?
Just anytime you're in public, just stand up and turn around and go, you need to deal with your daddy issues. And then just walk out. You're just talking to everybody.
Like the like religious people that stand on a box at a corner with like a speaker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Except it's just about everybody needs to deal with the issues with their parents. Yeah. You got to forgive them. You got to let go of these things.
Move on. It doesn't define your life. Okay.
Yeah. We get into the casting?
Anything else, you guys? Let's get into it.
Let's do it.
Do you want to work up to Mr. Rogers or start with Mr. Rogers?
This time I want to start because mine is dependent. Right.
Okay, cool.
Ooh, interesting. I have a guess that all of us are going to have the same Mr. Rogers.
Interesting.
That's going to be my bet.
I'll be excited if we do.
All right. Let's let mine.
Yeah, go for it.
Off this time.
You want me to start with Mr. Rogers?
Yeah.
Okay. So for my Mr. Rogers, I go with Reading Rainbow himself, LeVar Burton.
Wow.
We're on the same page, dude.
Are you on the same page? Nice.
We did a lot of the same casting last time, too.
Okay. I think that is the best cast. Wow, that was great. You guys nailed that one. I went a little more controversial, but I have... Okay, so this is why I want to start with Mr. Rogers. I have two options.
Okay. I can't wait.
And then, so Mr. Rogers and Matthew Reese. Mm-hmm. These two guys, one plays one plays the other, and it could go either way.
Okay.
Jamie Foxx and Will Smith.
Hmm.
Oh, whoa.
And either Jamie's Mr. Rogers or Will is, and then the other is the other. We're going to do both.
I'm going to shoot Will two Moore, movies simultaneously. Will Moore is Mr. Rogers for some reason.
Same. But it might be fun to flip it.
The thing is, I thought of Will because of the persona, and even with the slap and everything, like, just kind of fit to me. And then with Jamie, with the transformation kind of that Tom was doing and the way he was acting, speaking on Measured and Slow, I was Jamie would be so good at finding this character.
Have you heard Jamie Foxx's Trump impression?
Amazing.
Oh, bro, it was so funny. Just like saw it. Going on my phone. It was just like a very casual, like he's hanging out with friends that you just sort of drops, and it's like very good. I sort of forgot of like, oh, that's like a real skill he has. Truly. Is like the subtle perfection of his impressions.
Yeah. He's just like hanging out with Snoop or something.
Yeah, he's on a couch. And just starts
doing it. Yeah. It's not like they were even talking about, he just was like, the Trump will be like, and then just goes into
it. And then just drops into it. It's like really good. Yeah.
So Will Smith, Jamie Foxx.
Cool. Okay.
It influences a couple other decisions, but let's do the wife.
Or should we do our Matthew Reese character?
Yeah.
Lloyd, you guys got to do the Matthew Reese. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lloyd Vogels. Yeah. What's your Lloyd Vogel, Aman?
So for mine, I'm picking a guy that's got, you know, torture on his face. He could play it. He could play this character well. I'm going Lakeith Stanfield.
Again!
Oh, yes!
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, hey. I can tell same thing. Like, I can picture Lakeith in the scene where they're in Mr. Rogers' apartment on the couch, and he gets out the puppets.
Yeah.
Like, what is happening?
Yeah,
I do not want to talk. I'm interviewing.
To throw another name out there, I would say William Jackson Harper. And I just watched...
Oh, interesting.
To plug another show, I just finished... I'm late, but the Underground Railroad that Barry Jenkins
did. Oh, yeah, that was cool.
Amazon. Yeah. Really, I mean, just a great show. And William Jackson Harper has a great role in like last three episodes or so. Ooh, okay. So I'll throw another name out there. Doesn't hurt.
It's interesting to pick. He doesn't often play cynical. So it's interesting. You know what I mean? Like he's got like a lightness to him that he's interesting.
Yeah. He showed some of that in Love Life.
Oh, I haven't seen that
yet. You saw that series. Yeah. Because he's dating and he's not like the greatest guy in that one. Like okay, he kind of usually is. Yeah. How about the dad, Jerry Vogel?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So for my dad, I went with a pod favorite, Keith David.
Oh, yeah.
I definitely thought about KD, definitely.
Ooh, yeah, he could do it.
Pod favorite.
Legend.
I went with someone I don't know if we've used yet. He's like one of those guys you see his face in a ton of stuff. Do you guys know Rob Morgan? You Google him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rob Morgan. Okay.
You'll instantly see his face and be like, oh, yeah, I've seen him in a million things. I think he's
great. I went with, if Jamie is the reporter, mm-hmm. the dad is Clark Peters from The Wire.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. other things. Mm-hmm. If Will is the reporter, the dad is James Earl Jones.
Wow.
I match skin tones, I guess.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
That's great.
Also, we never see James Earl Jones. We never mentioned him. He's still alive. I want to see him.
Still out there kicking. Put him in it.
Next on the list is reporter's wife, Andrea Vogel.
I kept her same actress.
Yeah, I just kept the same. I kept her.
It doesn't feel right to replace one black actor with another. Yeah. It didn't. You got the job. Good for you.
You're right. It didn't feel right, so I replaced her with a different ethnicity.
What'd you do?
Interesting.
I went with just because I'm like, oh, okay, let's see a new combo. I'm totally mispronouncing this. Ho Yeon Jung
from
she is the one of the stars of Squid Game.
Oh yeah, bringing the international audience.
Mm-hmm. You remember her? Like the main lady from
Squid Game. I didn't see Squid Game, so. I have to look her up.
Yeah, I haven't yet either.
Oh, you guys got to watch Squid Game.
But I have watched The Sopranos.
And The Americans.
It's just a different flavor. It's all the same show, but just a different flavor. Mm-hmm. Squid Game, Sopranos, The Americans.
Did you guys cast? Oh, yeah. Who'd you cast on? Did you say?
Yeah, same. Susan Kalichi Watson is her name. Yeah. I know she's on This Is Us, but like, where did she come from? She just popped up.
That's out of that. That's really goodness. Yeah,
she's where was she in her like 20s? Was she doing things?
Yeah, probably theater. Like probably doing like those like one character like episodes of dramas.
Yeah,
right.
I think Hollywood dropped the ball with this one. She should have been.
Yeah.
Hopefully, this movie gave her a little boost. Yeah,
she's so engaging and. Yeah. Yeah, there the one mention of race in the whole movie. She kind of talked about it when her husband left her and she had trouble finding a cab.
Oh, interesting.
Remember that? She's like, obviously I had an issue trying to get a cab.
Wow.
Right. And then she just moved right along.
Any other roles that you guys did? There's
I did Mrs. Rogers, Joan Rogers.
Yeah, same.
And I did Bill the producer, which didn't have a strong eye. I was like, maybe I'll cast one more guy. But yeah, so Joan Rogers, I put Elfrey Woodard. Mr. Rogers. Yeah,
that's good. Great.
Okay. I once had the pleasure of being her waiter back in the day, which was exciting.
Tell me she was awesome. Tell me she was
Very nice. She was there with her family. It was when I was in college and I had wait tables at this restaurant at a hotel. And she was there on vacation with her family. Very, very nice.
Oh, nice.
So dope.
Yeah. For me, I went with, the Mrs. Rogers role, I went with Tichina Arnold.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Always love to see her.
Pam from Martin.
Oh, yeah.
Love to see her in something. I only did the dad's new wife, the dad's wife.
Oh, I didn't do her. Uh-huh. Yep.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And I went with Jack Kay.
Oh, yeah. That's fun.
She's fun. You know, we never see her like we could.
Uh-huh.
Wow, yeah.
Jack Kay, bring Jack Kay back.
Bring her back.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's cool. She's got that like vibe sort of like Dad's New Wife.
Yeah, Dad's New Wife vibes. Yeah. I feel like she would love that, you know.
She'd be good, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Any other ones that you guys did?
I did was Bill, the like bald producer, who's sort of like Mr. Rogers' strongman, who I cast Charles Parnell, who he was in Top Gun Maverick. He was also in Grand Crew. He played Echo's dad in that episode.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He's got like a real face. He's got like a face that like will freeze you. Yeah.
Dad.
Chiseled. Yeah.
Is what, you know, he...
Right.
Might or might not be referred to in the room, you know.
Very chiseled man.
Truly, yeah. Truly.
So that's it. Unless you guys, you know, leave the floor open.
For casting.
Yeah.
I really liked it. I thought, like I said, I never got around to seeing it because I was like, I saw the documentary. But I thought they made cool choices with this movie. And I thought, even though it's not really about Mr. Rogers, it is about the thing that Mr. Rogers seemed to dedicate his life to, which is talking about feelings. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the importance of listening. Mr. Rogers talked in this movie, at least. And I'm going to go watch the doc when I get a chance now, and meaning to. Mm-hmm. He talks slowly and it's almost like he's listening as he's talking.
Mm-hmm.
And the importance of listening and maintenance towards everything he stood for was lecturing about, you know, something I took away from it. Yeah. Even in a movie about Mr. Rogers, he's teaching us lessons
that
last a lifetime.
Truly, truly. The big takeaway for me was that we're all just a bunch of, you know, injured little kids. And even as adults, we're just children who are trying to deal with whatever issues we were having. So for him to speak so slowly and kind of like see right through you and see you as the little kid, I'm like, oh man, this person's dangerous, but and helpful.
Yeah.
You know,
versus Dave.
With great power comes great responsibility.
Truly. And he took on the responsibility.
He was Spider-Man. This was a good one. Enjoyed it. Stay tuned next week. Do something else. I don't know what we're going to do. We never talked about it.
It could be anything.
Yeah, it can be wild.
Are we going to make a crazy left to do something just outrageous? Or
I feel like already we're very surprising, but on brand movies.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Truly.
For sure. It's a great season. Mm-hmm. See you guys next week.
Peace.